Welcome to You Are an IP Company podcast with Carrie Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Our passion is helping entrepreneurs publish, protect, and promote their intellectual property. This podcast is sponsored by Instant IP and Wigan X. And now get ready for You Are an IP Company.
I remember as a kid picking up a little Super Bowl and seeing a TM. And I thought, what in the world is that TM thing? And it got me curious, Katie, from a very young age. And we are now talking about the Superscript TM, the Superscript IP. And people are going to learn a ton about what's happening in the world right now. But first of all, Katie, this is called IP marking. And we talk about that in our book, You Are an IP Company. But why is it important to mark your IP?
Right. So this is a certification mark to show that certain types of goods are certified by certain types of standards. So this is kind of a type of trademark, but it's more about certifying the, you know, standards of the goods. So that's why you'll sometimes hear it referred to as a certification mark.
I like that. So most people are familiar with Idaho potatoes. It's a certain type of potato that has certain standards that are attached to it. And not anybody can just say, hey, we have Idaho potatoes.
Right.
Right. Yep. And so that is very important when you're certifying things. I'm not going to say this is 100% accurate, but like different types of produce, different types of diamonds, different types of gold. I mean, who knows? But it's a certain standard that marks that it's gone through a certain system and process. But under the trademark banner, that certification mark is one example. But Katie, there's also IP marking with patents. We usually do that with numbers.
Yeah, so that's a different thing. So that would be called patent marking, where once your patent is issued, you would then mark your goods that are covered and protected by the patent. And that serves to put potential infringers on notice that the product is protected by certain patents. So then when they infringe, they're deemed to be a willful infringer at that point, because they then have knowledge that it's protected with patents and they're actively infringing with that knowledge.
Yeah. And for the layman, because Katie knows a ton, but for the layperson, it's almost like saying, look, if you don't put out in front of your house, no trespassing, then you can't be mad if somebody walks in your yard. Right. Because we're talking about property, intellectual property. And so again, if you're just like, hey, you infringed on my patent. Hey, I didn't even know there was a patent. So you're basically telling the person, look, here's the number. And by the way, in the Instant IP app, we put the number, patent number, because we want people to know, look, don't mess with us. This is protected. So that's IP mark, patent marking. Trademarking, literally, and then you have registered copyright, which is the C with the circle.
Yep. Right. And that's you know, a different registration process. Yep. So when you with copyrights, when you have your work or your music, whatever it is, in some kind of fixed medium, meaning written down, right? Then you have a copyright that exists automatically. But when you, if you want to be able to enforce the copyright and collect damages for an infringer, you have to take the extra step to register the copyright at the copyright office. And so that involves filling out some forms, submitting your work, and then that certificate will get issued a couple months later. And at that point, you'll have your registered copyright, where you can also put the world on notice, hey, this is protected with a copyright. And that's where you see that C in the circle used.
Yep. And super important, because when Anthropic stole my books, the fact that I had registered a copyright allowed me to be in the class action lawsuit and therefore get damages. If I didn't do that, then I would not have been qualified. And there's a lot of people who didn't have that, and therefore Anthropic, when they trained on their books without permission, they were essentially left without any recourse. So at Igniting Souls Publishing, one of my companies, we not only, it's like we do multi-layers, right? We do the instant IP immediately, because a lot of authors, I read something the other day, I love it, Katie. It's like a book exists long before it's published. I heard somebody say that quote and I'm like, dang, that's good, because it does. It exists for, some people have a book in their mind for years.
Yeah.
The concept, but they just didn't put it in a fixed medium. But if they're talking about it and it's not published and it's not protected on instant IP, now that idea has legs. And if they're not careful, that whole concept, you know, Start With Why, Simon Sinek, or Atomic Habits, James Clear, like if they didn't put it in a fixed medium and it's just an idea floating out there, how do you know you came up with that? When did you come up with it? What if somebody else hears you talk, then protects it, locks you out? That's why the superscript IP exists. And that's where we're talking about today. So when I, long time ago, when we were starting this whole, you became my lawyer and you started advising me, somewhere along the way, we said, look, besides just a QR code with a lock that describes that it was protected, what if we could define something with a superscript? And, you know, that's pretty cool. So that was a bunch of years ago where you started talking with me about that. And then, you know, I worked with Wigan and Dana and Frank specifically, but we filed that superscript IP in 38 countries around the world. And so what we want to do, Katie, like, why did you advise me to think about that?
Yeah, I think it was part of your process, right? Where right. You, with Instant IP, you have this very unique way to put on the blockchain proof of ownership of the conception.
Right.
Of somebody's idea, right? With a trade secret. So this certification mark helps certify that there is that timestamp showing proof of ownership of the invention or idea, trade secret, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's a way to also put the world on notice about that too.
I love it. So I think before we jumped on the show today, I don't know, I have half a dozen trademarks. I trademarked those things and we just got instant IP. Even though it took a lot of years, we got the logo. So this is a trademarked logo, but then we also did the word mark too. So that's a thing, Katie, that you can do images and words in terms of trademarking.
Right. Yes. So yes, if you have unique design elements in your logos, right, that's usually protected, and that would be a separate trademark filing from your word mark. Yeah. And that's another way to just kind of build additional scope of protection around everything that you've created too.
There's a story that I want to talk about, Katie, that I found on, it's funny because people tag me now on LinkedIn posts whenever there's IP, which is good. You know, I like to be tagged to jump in the conversation, but I got to share this with you. This is something new that just came up, and let me know if you can see my screen. Can you see my screen?
Yeah.
Is it super small though?
We can't see the writing.
I'm gonna get a better one here. I think I got it here. Come on now. I think I got this. Let me read it to you, okay? It basically says this: I thought I was too small to need a trademark. That mistake cost me millions. Early in my career, I wrote the book Unstoppable. This is Kelly Roach. I named my program The Unstoppable Entrepreneur. I figured nobody was in the online space. Then the business exploded past eight figures. I went to file a trademark and I got sued. What followed was a full rebrand. Thousands of assets, videos, and episodes need to be renamed. Years of my focus was pulled off growth and poured into damage control instead, all because I didn't protect the name when I was a baby business. Trademarking your business isn't another legal chore. It's a business growth investment. Why would you spend all that money on ads, coaching, branding, and a beautiful website while building on land you don't even own? Isn't that good?
That's so good. Yeah.
I know.
Yeah, I think that's a that's a common theme with companies when they're starting out, that they think, oh, I'm too small. It doesn't matter, right?
Yep.
This isn't important, but it really is. And it really does make a difference. Timing on protecting your IP is so crucial.
Yeah. And now you can see this young lady.
Yes.
Yeah. But I mean, millions, you know, and again, Taylor Swift didn't know that she was going to be this big, but she did. I've seen interviews, I think when she's 14 and she's already like, yeah, this is my goal. This is my dream. And she did trademark early on. So you and I say one of my favorite quotes here. We say, don't protect your IP when you're big, become big by protecting your IP. And I love what Kelly said, that it's so good. The land thing. Why spend all that money on coaching, branding, and a beautiful website, building on land you don't own?
Yep. That's right.
Dang, that's good. I mean, again, intellectual property, property, land. And yeah, it would be so dumb to like build a multi-million dollar mansion and be like, oh yeah, I forgot to buy the land. And then you have to bulldoze it all. But that's what happened with Instant IP. Like, we had a rebrand because, you know, this little tricky company worth billions had this little hidden thing in the corner. And again, now we do all the due diligence, super excited. So yeah, from day one, Katie, I wanted a plan for growth. It costs a bunch of money to file with Superscript IP, but I wanted the world to know very quickly that, oh, that was protected with blockchain technology. That's official. That has a smart contract behind it. So I would encourage people, if they are Instant IP users, use it. We give it to you for life. That right to use the Superscript IP. It's been certified. Katie, let's talk briefly as we close today about the TM, because I think, you know, true story. I was at a conference the other day. I'm not going to name the name because you can guess which one, but I walk in the hallway and I see all the vendors, and we were one of them, sponsors. And I look up and I saw one booth had a TM, you know, after their name. And whenever I see a TM, you know, I'm not saying it's a cuss word, but I do think of it as a cuss word, not because I'm against it, but I quickly brought out my phone and I'm just like, I wonder if he really filed.
Had the application process.
Because that's the only time, right? The only time you should use a TM, I think. I know this isn't legal advice, but I think the only time you should use it, if it's filed, but it's pending. Because sure enough, I put his name into the USPTO and another company owns it. In the same class.
Wow. Yeah.
So I'm thinking, I actually went up to the guy, you know, I didn't embarrass him, but I went up to the guy privately and I just said, because we had talked about a future book of his, and I'm like, listen, man, I got to tell you this. If this other company sees this, they own the R. You're going to have to take down your whole booth. I mean, you may have damages, but Katie, talk about that a TM's actually telling your competitors, one, either A, you think something's valuable and you haven't filed it, so now they know, It's like saying there's gold in my house and the front door's open, or you might be infringing if you didn't check.
Right. Yeah. I'd say, so sometimes people use the TM because they want to just, it's again, another way of putting the world on notice that you're using the mark. Right. So maybe sometimes there can be a time between when you start using it to when you file the mark. Right. But I think it's doing your necessary diligence before you file is so important. Yeah. Even doing your diligence, you're not going to know who might oppose the mark, right?
Yeah.
Because companies come out of the woodwork and, yeah, they set up alerts. And when there's marks coming to registration that are maybe similar or overlapping, that's a lot of time when these oppositions are filed. So I'd say it's not perfect, but this happens more often than you would think. And that's why figuring out if there are other marks pending already in the sorts of classes that you want to file in, that's usually a good indicator of if it's going to be an easy prosecution or not. Yeah. Really.
Yeah. And I mean, I highly doubt somebody wouldn't know Just Do It, but this happens in other classes where somebody is ignorant and they might throw a TM on a Just Do It, you know,
right.
And if they do, they're in serious trouble. And so that's why I kind of discourage people from saying, like, don't just throw TMs on everything. Even if you think it's yours, like, do a quick search. Because the moment you start putting money behind it and making t-shirts and websites and, you know, buying domain names and all this, you might have to tear down that building.
That's right. And it's, it can be, usually it's going to be a little bit easier and probably less expensive to change the name before
right.
you've invested a lot of time and resources into building the branding. Because if you do wait too long, you know, it becomes pretty expensive to then destroy all your goods that have the infringing mark on them, make new goods, right? Update your website, yeah, everything. So there can be a real uphill cost battle to this.
And listen, I'm super excited about this because one of my competitors in book publishing name themselves probably a long time ago, but somebody else created an AI company and they own the .com. And I'm thinking, like, oh my gosh, like, in this is where we talk about in trademarking almost inventing a word like Spanx, you know, or some of these names,
right,
where if you invent the name, there, you know, I took some classes in trademark law and they're like, that's actually good. You probably know a term or something, but where you like invent a word, because now nobody else can like come along and be like, well, hey, we want that word too.
Right. It's kind of counterintuitive because a lot of times the marketing team, right, the business development team, they want something that kind of describes the goods as they yeah. are. But from a trademark perspective, that's usually a lot harder to get approved. So you want something trademarked that is kind of unique and made up, like Kleenex, right? That
yeah.
that's something that completely made up.
Xerox,
right?
Yeah.
All these kind of words that have so much value because they're made up, and there's all that consumer brand recognition for those products that
yeah.
carry those names on them.
Dr. Pepper,
yeah.
Pepsi, you know, like all these different words, that Tic Tac. It's very important, like you're saying. And I mean, that's why we got Instant IP through, because it took a while, but, and I'm so glad we have it. By the way, somebody tried in 2001 and it says it was dead. So we came 20 years later. But I agree, like, this is not, it seems trivial and unimportant until you're the one getting a lawsuit, cease and desist, or infringer, you know, like now it becomes a real thing. So I feel like a little due diligence today to know about IP marking, this episode specifically, the Superscript IP, it's going to help. So Katie, thanks for educating us, educating me on this over my last 5 years. And what would you say to the person, maybe we land the plane with this, you know, next time they think they throw a TM on something, what would be like a first step that you might think might be a good basic hygiene, like call a lawyer?
Call a lawyer, have them do some searching on it, right? Figure, and they can also help guide you on, based on the search results and what you're doing, what categories of goods and services are going to make sense for you too. So there can be a lot of real value in that too.
Absolutely. Last quick story. You know, I used Clarity Attracts, Confusion Repels for 12 years, had it printed on business cards, in my books. And then all of a sudden that influencer last August, I didn't know it, but all of a sudden I see everybody using Clarity Attracts, Confusion Repels. And I'm nervous because I'm like, what? Not just, oh, people are taking my term, but they might rush to file a trademark and lock me out of something that I built land on. So just the quick steps where I had protected it on Instant IP, I did have the timestamp, but then I filed a federal trademark, did a press release, you know, why not show up in AI, show up in different Google searches. So now when you type in, I'm going to test this here. When I go file incognito window, which means that it's not tracking me, and I type in Clarity Attracts, Confusion Repels. You ready for this, Katie? This is fun. It shows up as me, you know? But yeah. Again, a lot of people are using it. So what should I do, Katie? What could I do? Like if I actually cared about, you know, tracking everybody else, I typed in here. And, you know, Clarity Attracts, Confusion Repels. It's a fundamental rule. I got another joker who's trying to take it. But if I say who coined, and again, it's not ego. It's basically saying, you see, there it is. Boom. You know, widely attributed, but then LinkedIn posts. You can see how I, you know, Goodreads, my Instagram. Yeah. But it's tough though, because there's a lot of people out there that brand specialists, you know. What could I do? What should I do, Katie?
Yeah. No, I think that's why really searching ahead of time is so key, because you want to uncover what's out there, and you're not going to know till you do some searching. And you know, it depends too where you want to file as well. So sometimes you might only want to cover the US, but other times you might want to get other countries covered too. So that's why, you know, you might need to do some worldwide searching to see what other marks might come up during prosecution, say in France or, you know, China, right? But that way you're kind of informed before you invest a lot of money into it too.
Yeah. Good news is that we had made a list of those people who were infringing, and I just kindly, you know, sent them the letter that said, hey, you probably don't know this. And the good news is that most of the people said, sorry, I'm done, you know, because they don't want to mess with it. Even an article, I don't know if you remember that, but there was an article in Forbes that quoted it with somebody else, and I sent them that. Right. And Forbes was like, in 24 hours, they were like, oh, we don't want to mess with this. We're done. So that was pretty cool.
Exactly. Yeah. And, you know, most places take that seriously, right? Especially if, you know, I've had clients where there's direct trademark infringement on goods being sold on Amazon. So we have to get a takedown, right? So this happens more and more often. And that's why if you have the registration, it goes a lot smoother to be able to get it taken down.
Absolutely. All right, folks, keep taking your IP seriously. Don't think you're too small. Don't build your house on land that you don't own. Be a soul on fire. We'll see you.
Thank you for listening to the You Are an IP Company podcast with Cari Oberbrunner and Katie Rubino. Brought to you by Instant IP and WiganX. Visit Instant IP today and WiganX.com for more help on your IP journey. Remember, your ideas are valuable. Protect them today.